Maybe it was a token of good faith, or... I needed to stop speculating and start hunting. I had a new plan for the morning, and it made my stomach twist. Have you seen this before? I flashed the gambling chip at Salvatore. He may have been a mediocre clothing vendor, but he was an extraordinary source of knowledge. I'd gotten up with the sun and rushed out of the house before Nonna interrogated me about the devil again. He might not be chasing me yet, but I was certainly trying to find him and his wretched brothers. A bead of sweat rolled down my neck after my brisk jog to the market, and I probably looked a little wild with my loose, damp curls. Hopefully Sal wouldn't scrutinize me too closely when there was something much more interesting to pay attention to. Out of anyone in the city, Salvatore was the most reliable gossip, and the most likely to share every detail he knew with anyone who asked. "Is that?" He leaned across a pile of folded shirts, squinting. "That's it. That's the club everyone's talking about these days. It's real mysterious. No name, just the crowned frog stamped onto the door. I hear it changes locations, and you'll need one of these chips to get in." He rummaged through a pile of clothes and held up a pretty crimson dress. It was one of the finer garments in his stall. I immediately became suspicious. "Trade? I'll give you these for that. It's a real bargain." "Grazie, but I'm going to hang on to it for a while." I stuck the gambling chip down the front of my bodice. "Do you know the last location of the gambling den?"
"Somewhere near the cathedral, but that was days ago. It's probably long gone by now. If you don't have any luck there, ask old man Giovanni, who sells granita near the front entrance. He likes to gamble."
I decided to try my luck with the cathedral first. I spent a good 30 minutes walking down each alley and side street. I stumbled across a man urinating near a palm tree, but the mysterious gambling den remained hidden. I searched for a few more minutes before seeking out old man Giovanni. A sign on his granita stand was flipped to closed. Of course, he was probably at the gambling den. I was about to give up and try my luck elsewhere, when I felt the sudden urge to clutch my amulet. Maybe the goddess of death and fury was still guiding my path. Or maybe, buried someplace deep down where I didn't want to examine too closely, I sensed the slight lure of demon magic. I could have sworn I heard a faint humming guiding my path. I didn't know if I was losing myself to phantoms, or if it was a latent skill that was emerging each time I held my cornicello and concentrated. I didn't care what the reason was. I only needed to let my instincts guide me. After a few minutes of wandering down side roads that spiderwebbed away from the cathedral, I stopped in front of a door with a crowned frog burned onto it. I'd done it. And now I felt a little queasy. I dropped my amulet and considered my next move. I could turn back, go to sea and vine, and forget this nightmare. Leave princes of hell to someone better equipped with dealing with them. Or I could try to be a little more like Vittoria. I pulled the gambling chip out from my bodice and held it against the door, praying I wasn't following a little too closely in my sister's footsteps. Chapter 18. For spells of courage, anoint a red candle with the following items during a waxing moon, and burn until flame extinguishes. 1 part cayenne pepper, 1 part clove, 2 blessed oil, and a heaping tablespoon of crushed charcoal. Notes from the Decarlo Grimoire. The door swung open, and I traveled down a creaking set of stairs before entering a subterranean lair. Based on the grimy dead-end entrance, I thought the inside of Greed's Den of Sin would be dark and derelict, which was only partly the case. The overcrowded room was indeed dark. Brick walls, a gleaming ebony bar that spanned the length of the room, and several velvet-topped tables in deep burgundy dotted the tiled floor. Each table featured different card games. One colorful round of scorpa drew the most attention. Men and women gathered, their gazes fixed on what they hoped was their winning hand. I had a feeling the only true winner was the demon prince in residence. The gambling den oozed with the promise of riches. Desire for wealth and power was so potent, it almost took physical form. I pictured it reaching for my throat, squeezing until I drew breath in greedy draps. My attention darted from one sinful tableau to the next. Greed, in its many forms, made an appearance. There was greed for power, wealth, attention. Excess was the poison of choice here, and patrons couldn't seem to get their fill. I wondered if they knew what time it was, that the sun had just risen and beckoned them to step outside, to live. Some were haggard, tired, as if they'd been up for days, addicted to whatever their chosen form of greed was. There was also an edge of violence lurking in the atmosphere, like a simple want or desire could twist into something deadly at any moment. It wasn't hard to imagine someone knifing their competition and taking what they wanted by force. Sharp gazes cut around the room, and I followed the stairs. In one corner, a man held court with dozens of expensive liquor bottles, doling out drinks to those who luxuriated in his presence. On the opposite end of the room, men and women slowly removed layers of clothing, swaying their near-naked bodies in hopes of capturing the greedy gazes of those content with watching. Attention was their vice, and even though it felt wrong to participate in something that was surely enhancing greed's power, I couldn't stop from indulging in their sultry show. I shook myself from the trance and looked for the demon I suspected was around. A door along the far wall was flanked by scowling guards in fine clothes. I'd wager anything I'd find greed there, if I could make it through the crowded room. There were so many patrons that I had to tread carefully. I tried weaving around groups of people standing behind card players, but barely squeezed through immovable bodies. Servers carried silver trays overflowing with food and drink, making the progression more difficult than it already was. I managed to shoot between a line of people topping off Prosecco glasses before a fight broke out behind me. Cheers and jeers erupted at the nearest table. I stood on tiptoes and peered past a crowd of people who'd moved in to see what had drawn such a reaction. The door was still impossibly far. I debated hopping up onto the tables and running across them when I heard her name. It was a blade to my heart.
Vittoria.
I spun slowly, searching for whoever'd called out for my sister. My attention landed on a man around my father's age, half sitting in his chair, half falling to the floor. Gambling chips and empty glasses were stacked in haphazard piles around him. He lifted his gaze, and I drew in a sharp breath. Domenico Nucci, Sr. Signor Nucci, do you...
Vittoria, be a good girl and see about my drink, will you?
His focus slid to the next card someone slapped down.
Maybe get some of those fried calamari with extra arrabbiata to dip them in, too. It's going to be another long game. These cheaters are making me feel wolfish.
He smiled like we were sharing some big secret. I'm not... I'm Emilia. My sister is... Signor Nucci was obviously intoxicated and probably thought he was at Sea and Vine ordering dinner. The spicy marinara and fried octopus were one of our most popular dishes to share. It also explained his confusion over calling me Vittoria. She used to help our father and uncle in the dining room sometimes. I'll make sure someone brings you your food soon. I turned and smacked into a hard chest. One of the nicely dressed men who'd been guarding the door glared down at me.
The boss would like a word with you. Come this way.
Whatever pain I'd felt about being mistaken for my sister was immediately replaced with fear. I followed the muscular man as he cleared a path to the door. Power seeped from whatever lay beyond it, and I knew it meant a prince of hell was in residence. I steeled my buzzing nerves. The man wasted little time with entertaining my trepidation and shoved the door open. He barreled into the room without a second glance, and with little choice, I followed.
She's here, senor.
I don't know what I expected to find. Maybe a fire-breathing dragon guarding a mountain of gold and jewels, or a really large poisonous frog lashing out with a whip-like tongue covered in spikes. But a lavish room fitted with layered Persian rugs, an oversized desk, plush leather chairs, and a dazzling crystal chandelier wasn't it. Everything was elegant and warm, so very at odds with the shivers running down my back. The Prince of Greed sat behind the mammoth desk, fingers steepled beneath his chin, a bored look on his finely carved face. He was, in a word, bronzed. From his dark auburn hair to the deep russet of his eyes, he reminded me of copper coins melted and recast in a humanoid form. If he had a dagger like Envy and Wrath, he'd hidden it well, which made me trust him even less.
I wasn't anticipating this meeting, but I'm pleased nonetheless.
He smiled. There was something off about it, something not quite natural.
Please, sit.
He motioned to one of the chairs in front of him, but I lingered near the door. Either his powers were greatly diminished despite the greed pouring from his gambling den, or he'd tamped them down for this meeting. A demon game, feigning weakness to lure in prey. Though in this room, he didn't really seem to hide who he was or where he was from. Two demon guards stood behind him with their arms crossed, growling deep in their throats. One had pale green reptile skin and matching eyes, and the other was covered in short fur, similar to a deer, and had liquid ebony eyes. Two antlers curled up and away from the top of the fur-covered demon's head. It was disconcerting, seeing something that almost looked human with the skin and eyes of an animal. I tried to convince myself to cross the room, but couldn't force my body to carry me anywhere near those demons. Greed's attention slowly shifted from me to what had caught my eye. He snapped his fingers and the room cleared. When he looked at me again, there was hunger in his gaze. One that spoke of possession. He didn't want to seduce me. He wanted to own me. I wouldn't be a trophy to him like Envy. I'd be a tool for power.
Amelia, please.
He nodded to an unoccupied chair.
No one will harm you while you're here. You have my word.
Said the wolf to the little hen. His use of my name unnerved me, but I managed my best impression of a confident stride and sat down. Did my sister tell you my name?
No, you did. Pardon my rudeness, but I have informants stationed throughout the club. They heard your exchange with one of my regular customers.
His smile was almost convincing this time. I wondered if he sensed my fear and adjusted his responses accordingly. That thought brought on a new rush of nerves I didn't need. Being alone with Greed was a terribly rash idea, but I really couldn't think of a better way to get information from him.
Vittoria didn't mention you at all, actually. This is quite a surprise.
He poured two glasses of water from a pitcher I hadn't noticed and slid one to me. Crowned frogs were etched onto the glasses. I accepted the water, but didn't drink. Why a frog?
The greedy creatures. Content with neither land nor water, they desire both. Made sense? In a demon logic sort of way. Did Vittoria summon you?
You're full of questions.
He studied me closely.
It's strange how identical you are.
His tone didn't hold any clues to his emotions. It was a statement of fact, nothing more. He didn't seem to mind, one way or the other, that my sister was dead. I know my sister came here before she was murdered. I want to know why. What did she want from you?
Right for the jugular. A bold move, little mouse.
He leaned back, his gaze sharp, calculating. I did my best not to squirm under his scrutiny.
It seems I have valuable information that you like. And you, Signorina Di Carlo, also have something of great value to me. I will answer your questions to the best of my ability, only in exchange for your amulet.
My hand automatically moved to my cornicello. Why do you want it?
Do you know what it is?
A folk charm to ward off the evil eye. Unlike Malocchio charms humans wore, it would also bring the world into eternal twilight if I brought it together with my sister's amulet, according to Nonna. I decided to keep that to myself in case he started drooling on his finely trimmed suit. Greed removed a velvet pouch from the desk drawer and dropped a necklace into his palm. A gold chain with a ruby the size of a quail egg that twinkled in the light. A strange essence came off it, almost like a high-keening wail in the distance, setting my teeth on edge. I wanted him to put it back where he'd found it, immediately. What is that?
It's called the Eye of Darkness, and it grants whoever wears it true protection from creatures of malevolent intent. Give me your amulet, and it's yours.
A gift like that didn't come without a price. What else do you want?
For you to join yourself to House Greed.
I stared at Greed. Then I swore my skin physically tried to crawl away from my body in protest as he gazed back. He was classically handsome, but there was something off about him. His eyes were void of human emotion. He looked alien and wrong. I couldn't imagine my sister falling in love or even lust with him. Which meant her reason for coming here was not a result of seduction. He had information she wanted, and I wanted to know what it was. Why do you want me to align myself with you?
Because I believe you'll be very useful to me in the future. If you become queen, you'll owe me a favor. A powerful one, too, if this charm ends up saving your life.
Greed didn't strike me as a betting kind of creature, which made me even more hesitant to accept this little present. I had no plans of becoming queen of the wicked, and would be damned if I gave him a reason to help put me on that dark throne. Did you offer the Eye of Darkness to my sister?
Accept my bargain and find out.
If you won't answer simple questions, I'm afraid we're through. I stood, ready to be as far away from this prince and place as possible, when his chair scraped across the floor.
Wait.
He sat back down, then put the ruby necklace in its pouch again. Some of the unease in my shoulders loosened.
In a show of good faith, I will answer one of your questions.
In exchange for?
Nothing. You have my word. Remember, the offer is for one question. Anything else will cost you.
I reclaimed my seat.
calculating my next move. There were so many questions I needed answers to, but none of them would be worth the cost of handing over my cornicello. I thought carefully about the list I'd written out last night, and focused on one detail that bothered me the most. It meant something. I wanted to know what. I chose my words with exacting precision. Tell me about the Horn of Hades. If he was surprised by my choice, it didn't show.
It's a key that locks the gates of hell.
I heard it was part of a curse, that if a witch wears it, she'll have power over the devil.
Witch legends are fascinating in their falsehoods. The Horn of Hades was a gift. Your sister knew the true story.
I desperately wanted to ask him what it was, but there was something more important I needed to know. How do you break a demon spell that was cast on an object? Greed's answering smile was toxic.
I told you about the Horn of Hades. The rest will cost you. I don't believe in giving without gain.
Now my smile turned sharp. Per your rules, that was my first actual question. He rolled his shoulders back, his nostrils flaring a bit. I was half convinced he was about to spring across the desk and wrap his hands around my neck. A long moment passed before he spoke.
Clever girl.
He reached for his glass and drank deeply, his knuckles turning white while he probably thought over my phrasing.
Sacrifice a bit of yourself.
That's not an honest answer.
Oh, but it is.
Greed took another sip of water.
Would you like to ask another question?
I would like to ask another dozen questions, but dragging useful information from a prince of hell was harder than I thought. I pressed my lips together. He kicked his boots up onto the desk and steepled his fingers again.
Allow me to be blunt, Signorina Di Carlo. Your sister gave me her amulet, knowing the importance of it. I need both hers and yours to work a spell. Give me your amulet, and I vow to protect your world.
Sure he would, right after he pillaged and destroyed it. Suspicion coiled around me. There was absolutely no way my sister had willingly given him her cornicello. If he did have it, then he'd taken it. I knew for a fact Vittoria had been wearing it the day she died. I swallowed hard. It was looking more and more possible that I was sitting across from my twin's murderer. I mentally crossed witch hunters off my list of suspects. Thus far, all of my clues kept pointing to demons. I wondered if Greed told my sister a similar story and she refused him. I was more than a little afraid of what he might do if I also tried walking away. He could probably sense fear, so I shoved it as far down inside me as I could and bluffed. If Vittoria gave you her amulet, show it to me.
Ah, he blew out a long breath. That isn't possible.
Not possible, or you won't do it.
Both. A Viperidae was summoned to this realm. Its nest is below the cathedral, and, well, they're very protective about their space. The amulet will stay there until it decides to give it up.
I didn't bother asking what a Viperidae was, or who'd summoned it. I doubted he'd tell me anything else after I tricked information from him. And you put the amulet there. I didn't expect an answer, and he didn't offer one. It was highly unlikely that he would put something he wanted so badly in a place he couldn't gain access to it. But I had a feeling my sister would. I knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Vittoria would never willingly give anyone, let alone one of the Malvagi, her amulet. Greed's story didn't add up. I wanted to hope against all odds he was being semi-truthful, but it was a gamble I couldn't risk taking. He did give me another short-term goal to focus on. I'd get my sister's Scodnicello back and ask Nonna why a demon would be so interested in them.
Well, he asked, do we have a deal, Signorina Di Carlo?
Grazie, I said, standing. But my answer is still no.
Chapter 19. A prince of hell is the most dangerous of the demons. He appears angelic, but will claw out your heart.
To combat his power, wear or draw a Chimaruta charm, a branch of Aru with 5 stalks sprouting designs that correlate to your needs. Choose 5 images needed to banish a demon prince back to his realm. Example, a key, dagger, owl, snake, and moon will send him straight to hell.
Notes from the Di Carlo Grimoire. Blood was the key to unlocking demon magic. I'd been thinking about Greed's seemingly innocuous answer all afternoon, and puzzle pieces slowly clicked into place. I tallied up a few instances where blood had been integral with demon magic. In order to summon a demon, I needed to offer blood in sacrifice. Then there was Wrath and his blood trade, the supposed blood debt Nonna mentioned. I tried and failed to hide my repulsion. Would it be too much for demons to accept a bit of wine instead? I sighed and pricked my finger with a pin, letting a single drop splatter onto Vittoria's diary. Breath held, I stared at it intently, waiting for some sign the spell held or disintegrated. There was no cataclysmic event or flash of lightning. One minute I couldn't open it, and the next I could. I hesitated with the spine half cracked. I'd been trying to get into this diary for so long, and now I was a little afraid of what I was going to find. This might reveal my sister's murderer. The more I learned, the more I doubted witch hunters. Demon princes were taking the lead as the most likely to commit murder. But if the devil needed a witch, it didn't quite make sense for them to thwart his efforts. Which meant someone in our circle might have been responsible. I shivered in place. It was easy to think she'd been killed by a demon, but the thought of it being someone she knew. I took a deep breath and began reading Vittoria's most private thoughts. The first several pages were dedicated to the perfume she'd crafted, a few random spells or charms for moon blessings and luck, a sketch or two of a Chimaruta, and a few other symbols I didn't recognize. I paused on a page where she'd written down one of Claudia's scrying sessions in great detail. I was about to scan the opposite page when something caught my eye. A tiny, almost insignificant note she'd left for herself. Am I hearing magical objects, or the souls attached to them over time? Sometimes the whispers are louder, clear. Other times they're frantic and hard to understand. Similar to Claudia's scrying, or different. Hearing magical objects. I stared at the line, unblinking. I had to be misunderstanding somehow. Vittoria never mentioned this ability before. We told each other everything. I was her twin, her other half. But then again, I'd never told her about the Luchicare either. I turned over the events of the night when we were 8. It was highly probable that she'd developed some latent ability too. I had. Though I had believed I was an anomaly because I'd been the one holding both of our amulets.
I hadn't confided in my sister because I didn't want her to worry about the repercussions, or blame herself since it had been her idea. I quickly turned to the next page, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. No clue to her magic. I flipped to another, and another. I'd gotten to the middle of the journal before finding another passage about the strange secret magic. I was out near the sea collecting shells and sea salt when I heard it. It started as a whisper, frantic, too low to hear clearly. I set my basket down and clutched my cornicello, which seemed to help me focus on the voice. Voices. There were many, and they were speaking all at once. They begged me to come help. They said the time was upon us. I followed the whispers until they turned to chatter, indistinct and out of sequence, like they were speaking in tongues. It reminded me of old Sofia Santorini, of the time her mind got trapped between realms. I wanted to walk away, to run back and get Emilia, but something warned me not to. I followed the hum of voices into a cave high above the sea. I don't know why, but I dropped to my knees and started digging. I found it there, buried deep within the earth. I managed to understand one line before it descended into chaos. Unfortunately, my twin didn't write down the line she'd heard. I exhaled loudly, hands shaking as I flipped through the rest of the diary. There wasn't any other passage about the mysterious it she'd found buried beneath the earth. I scanned doodles of flowers and hearts, Claudia's dreams, and all of the questions Vittoria had recorded the answers to. I couldn't bring myself to read the part about what ended up being our last night in the world together. So far, there were no names, no people she'd mistrusted, or demons she'd struck bargains with, how she'd ended up agreeing to marry. My attention fastened onto something that made my palms dampen. I didn't plan on listening to it again. I've already decided to hide it, far from where they could ever find it. Then it whispered something that sounded a lot like nonsense, but my blood prickled. The Horn of Hades is a key to locking the gates of hell. But according to it, what it really is two somethings. They are the devil's horns, cut off by his own hand. I held my cornicello, feeling the truth in the hum and whispers. The root of my power. Emilia and I, for reasons I am unsure of, have been wearing the devil's horns our whole lives. So, if that's true, how did they find their way to us? I slowly closed the diary and exhaled. Holy goddess! The devil's horns! It was hard to believe, and yet, I knew it was true. We'd been wearing the Horn of Hades our whole lives. No wonder Greed was so interested in our amulets. I couldn't even begin to imagine the damage that he could cause if he managed to get his hands on them both. I shoved that destruction from my mind and read over the last line my sister wrote again. It was an excellent question, one I fully intended to get the answer to immediately.
It's about time you tore yourself away from dark pursuits, Bambina. Your mother and father are sick with worry.
Nonna eyed me from the rocking chair she'd dragged across from the simmering cauldron. Spell candles for peace and restful slumber burned all around her.
All day, petrified, you were lying somewhere with your heart ripped out, alone, like your sister. Do you have any idea what you put us through?
I did, and I hated it, but I wasn't the only DiCarlo who had explaining to do. I moved fully into the kitchen and laid Wrath's dagger and then my cornicello on the island. Is this one of the devil's horns? Nonna's face paled. Have we been wearing the Horn of Hades?
Don't be silly. Who filled your head with these stories?
Nonna got up and walked over to the cauldron, added a sprinkle of herbs, and stirred them into her newest essence. It smelled of spruce and mint. I wondered where she got the evergreen, but didn't ask.
We don't believe in such things, Bambina.
A Viperidae was summoned and is guarding Vittoria's amulet. She stopped stirring the mixture.
It's true, then. The Malvagi have returned.
I waited for her to stop muttering protection charms or rush around the house, checking all the windows and doors for herbs and garlands of garlic she'd hung to keep wicked things out. She didn't ask me to grab olive oil and a bowl of water to make sure evil wasn't in our home this very moment. This calm, collected version of my grandmother was completely foreign to me. For as long as I could remember, she'd worried about the devil and his soul-stealing demons. Human children had nursery rhymes, but we'd been taught about the 7 demon princes, and the 4, in particular, DiCarlos should fear the most. I hadn't forgotten that Wrath had been named, nor had I figured out if he was the one who'd crave my blood, capture my heart, steal my soul, or take my life. Honestly, I could picture him fulfilling any of them. My grandma moved the wooden spoon around the boiling mixture, her attention stubbornly fixed on its ornately carved handle, and said nothing. Of course, now that all the nightmare stories were coming to life, she stayed silent.
Nonna, you have to tell me about the Horn of Hades. Vittoria knew about it, and she was killed. Please, if you don't want that to be my fate too, you need to tell me what it is and why we're wearing it. I deserve to know.
She stared into the cauldron and sighed.
Dark days are upon us. It's time to be a warrior of the light.
Nonna left her essences and removed a pitcher of wine from our sideboard. She poured herself a glass of Chianti, then sat in her rocker.
I never wanted it to come to this, child. But the hands of fate work their own magic. Who are we but puppets on their cosmic strings?
Cryptic, as usual. I decided to start with the smaller details and work my way up to the harder questions. Is it really a key for locking the gates of hell?
Yes and no. It has the ability to open and close the gates, but that's not all it does.
Are they the devil's horns?
Yes.
And you've known the whole time?
Nonna nodded. I stared at her, trying to process the fact that my grandmother, who'd been making us bless our charms to protect ourselves from the demon princes our entire lives, had placed such things around our necks.
La Prima cast a spell that turned them into 2 smaller amulets, hoping to hide them from all who'd seek them.
Because they belong to the devil.
Because if brought together, they not only have the ability to lock the gates, they can also summon him. They grant the summoner a certain bit of power over him.
I stared at the amulet I'd worn for as long as I could remember, wondering why my sister hadn't come to Nonna when she'd found this out. I still had so many questions about her bargain. If we had a means of controlling the devil, why didn't she just ask me for my cornicello? It made sense why greed was after it. His sin was closely tied to power. But if all princes of hell craved power, why then didn't Wrath try to snatch my cornicello? Something Envy said resurfaced amidst my confusion. What's a shadow witch?
Nonna made a disgusted sound. Shadow witches are what demons call us. We are known as Stella Strega.
Star witches. We are known? Since when are we known as star witches?
Nonna gave me a sardonic look. Since the dawn of our bloodline,
We hail from an ancient line of witches who had ties to the wicked prior to the curse. We were guardians, in a sense, ensuring creatures of the underworld remained there, never interfering with the human world. For a time, we worked beside the Malvagi. That was before... Nonna's wine glass flew across the room and shattered against the wall. Chianti dripped like blood. I screamed, but not because of the glass. A floating blade hovered against my grandmother's throat. My ghost demon was back, and it didn't seem like just a figment of my imagination now. It had been quiet the last few days, and I'd forgotten it. Now it was hard to ignore Wrath's serpent dagger as it glinted in the light. Little tricksy witch. The demon's blade pressed into Nonna's skin. I shook my head and stepped forward. Please, if this is about what I did to Greed, she has nothing to do with it. Leave her alone. She's innocent.
Innocent?
It accentuated the C until it sounded like a hiss.
She is no such thing.
Before I could dash across the room and knock Nonna away, her head jerked back, and the invisible hand dragged Wrath's blade across her throat. Blood gushed from her wound. She gurgled, the sound one of the most horrendous things I'd ever heard. The weapon clattered to the ground. I watched everything happen as if it occurred in slow increments. A window burst open, and I imagined the invisible demon fled through it. Then, reality crashed into me, and I was in motion. I was across the room a breath later. No! I snatched a cloth from the counter and held it to her neck, staunching the blood. Then I screamed until my voice broke, rousing the whole house from the spelled slumber Nonna had enchanted them with. There were spells to help slow the flow of blood, but I couldn't think through any of the panic screeching at me. It was as if my mind shut down, and all I could focus on was one basic need. Hold the wound. My mother rushed into the kitchen first, her attention immediately falling on Nonna. And the growing lake of blood. Tears streamed down my face, blurring my vision. I would not let my grandmother die, not like this. My father appeared a minute later, his eyes widening at the sight.
I'll get bandages.
I stopped paying attention to anything other than keeping the cloth pressed firmly against my grandmother's wound. Time ticked by. Blood saturated the cotton. My mother prayed over a thick herbal paste she'd made. I held firmly. I wanted to be the kind of person who didn't panic and could act calmly. But logic didn't penetrate my terror. Mama tried yanking my hands away, but I refused to budge. I had to keep applying pressure. Nonna needed me.
It's all right, baby. Let me get this on her. It'll seal the wound.
I can't.
You can. It's all right.
It took another bit of coaxing, but I finally relinquished my grip. Nonna slid to the ground, her breathing labored. I'd seen this in injured animals before, and it wasn't a good sign. My mother slathered the thick paste across the injury, then wrapped one of the clean bandages around it. My father had brought them in before he went to work, checking for any more intruders and securing our window. My mother finished tying it off with a prayer to the goddess of good health and well-being to heal Nonna quickly. I offered up a prayer of my own, hoping she listened to us both.
Help me get her into bed, Amelia.
I swiped at my tears and did as I was asked. Once we'd laid her across the mattress, my mother pulled up a chair to watch. I sat against the wall and stayed there until the sun set, turning the room bruised shades of purple and black. Nonna's breathing finally evened out, and she fell into a deep, restorative sleep. She'd made it, no thanks to me.
Praise the goddess. You should go get some rest, baby.
Your grandmother will be fine. The worst is over.
I nodded, but couldn't sleep now.
I wasn't sure I could ever rest again without seeing the gory scene replay in my mind. And the worst part was, Nonna was almost killed because of me. Then, when she needed me the most, I'd failed her again. I'd lost all memories of spells or healing charms. I'd shut down and let fear take control. If I hadn't started investigating my sister's murder or tricked Greed, none of this would have happened. I crept into the kitchen, wanting to clean up the blood before my parents saw it again. I scrubbed until the floor shined and my fingers ached. Then I repeated the routine, pouring water, scrubbing. I needed to remove the stains from the grout. It took most of the night, but I finally managed to erase all physical signs of the attack. But the memory would never leave me. I rinsed out the rag and leaned against the island, sipping a glass of water. It took a while for me to notice at first. But eventually I realized the invisible demon came here with a mission. I absently reached up, thinking of Nonna's injury, and went to hold my amulet. My hand dropped away, empty. I forgot I'd taken it off. I went to pluck it off the counter and froze. My cornicello was gone.
Chapter 20. You look like hell, witch. I glared at the demon of war by way of greeting. In a few short hours he'd be free, and I wasn't sure he'd answer any questions once the containment spell dissipated. After the brutal attack on Nonna, I left the house and wandered around Palermo, deciding what to do next. I'd made a terrible mistake, and it almost cost my grandmother her life. I shouldn't have ever gone back to my house after confronting Greed. Of course he'd send spies after me to steal my amulet. It was reckless to think a prince of hell would simply let me walk away unscathed after besting him. Now that I knew my sister and I had been wearing the devil's horns, and how powerful and dangerous they were, I had to get them back. I might not know where mine was at the moment, but thanks to Greed, I knew exactly where Vittoria's was. I just needed some information from Wrath about the Viperidae first, and then I'd set out to retrieve it. You'd know better than most what that's like. I smiled sweetly. I met two of your brothers, by the way. They're absolute gems. Wrath looked neither surprised nor interested in the news. He set his back against the wall, legs straight out, surveying the circle of bones that contained him. Of course, he wasn't wearing the shirt I'd bought for him. It was lying in a discarded heap on the ground.
I have 6 brothers. You'll have to be more specific.
Don't you know who's here? His attention subtly dropped to my hip before he jerked his gaze back up.
Have you come crawling back to beg for help? I'm not feeling very charitable today. Captivity doesn't suit me.
Demons invading my city, attacking my grandmother, stealing my cornicello, and murdering my sister didn't suit me either. Instead of arguing, I pulled a cannoli from the brown paper bag I'd tucked into my satchel. Nonna said you could catch more flies with honey than vinegar. I figured a cannoli would help me catch a prince of hell just fine. He looked startled when I handed it to him.
What is that?
Food. Unless you've been catching vermin, I doubt you've eaten.
I neither need human food, nor do I wish to taint my body with the foulness of it.
I stared at him, horrified. After all the terrible things that had happened, this was putting me over the edge. You really are a monster, aren't you?
That doesn't even look edible.
He took the cannoli between his 2 fingers and held it closer to inspect it.
What do you expect me to do with it?
Engage your enemies. He poked at the ricotta filling.
Is it poisoned?
I sighed. Just eat it, O mighty warrior. It's for pleasure, not pain. I made them myself. I swear they're not poisoned. This time. He looked skeptical, but took a bite. His attention flicked to mine as he chewed. I couldn't help but grin as he took a larger mouthful, then grabbed a second cannoli from the bag. He was halfway through it when he noticed me still watching and scowled.
What?
I do not wish to taint my body with the foulness of human food, I mocked. But desserts are acceptable. He didn't deign to respond. Instead, he rummaged in the bag, frowning at the emptiness. He set it aside and looked me over again.
I imagine these delicacies were part of a larger scheme to infiltrate my defenses. You smell like blood that isn't your own. Your hair is tangled, like some wild creature built a nest in it and invited its kin. My blade is missing from your hip, and you look ready to curse the world. What is it you desire to know, witch? What scared you?
My hand moved to the place I'd been strapping his dagger. After the damage it had inflicted on my grandmother, I couldn't stand the thought of holding it. Now I felt its absence almost as much as I missed my cornicello. How would someone summon a viperidae?
Someone with a sense of survival wouldn't.
Maybe someone immortal and arrogant already did.
Doubtful.
Wrath wasn't amused with my assessment of demon royalty.
Viperidae are unique creatures. If they choose to guard something or bring it into their nest, no denizen of the underworld may interfere. They must choose to give it up on their own.
I made a mental notation to bring him dessert any time I wanted information. He was downright pleasant and chatty. What does it look like?
Its namesake. Like a viper, it's got long hinged fangs. It also happens to be larger than I am and is twice as deadly. Very few antidotes exist if someone is bitten, and the ones that do exist aren't to be taken lightly. There's a cost for using them, like all magic. Make your own choice, but know you may not survive to see another sunrise if you disturb one.
I rubbed at my arm, not because his warning frightened me, but because there was an annoying sensation burrowing beneath my skin. Like someone was scratching back and forth over the same section with a pin. Wrath tracked the movement, and then glanced at his own arm. It seemed our tattoos were transforming once again, winding around the serpents, which I noted Wrath now sported around his twin crescent moons too, were wildflowers. Before my eyes, my snakes were given shimmering, even scales. I didn't want to think it was beautiful, but it was. Undeniably so. Wrath curled his hand into a fist. I couldn't tell if it was because of the pain or because of our strange, ever-changing ink. I decided not to press the issue. I had one more question for the demon before I left on my mission. If someone was to attack a viperidae, what sort of spell might they use? He dragged his attention from the magical ink on his arm, his look a study of resignation.
No one should be attacking a viperidae. But if someone was a foolish witch with a death wish, then that witch might try casting a sleeping spell. It might be the only way to sneak around it.
I stopped myself from thanking him. If it wasn't for him and his cruel brothers, my entire family wouldn't be in this mess. I inhaled deeply, thinking about the sleep spell. It was simple. I liked simple plans. It meant that there was less that could potentially go wrong.
One final word of caution.
Wrath pushed himself up from the ground and moved to where I stood near the edge of the bone circle. I ignored the expanse of toned golden skin in my face.
Freedom will be mine soon.
If you are foolish enough to attack such a creature, I will not come for you. I stared up at him. Good.
Last month, if someone told me I'd choose to wander through forgotten tunnels beneath the cathedral alone, tracking down an ancient snake demon, guarding one half of a sacred key that not only locked the gates of hell, but were actually the horns of the devil, I'd think they needed medical attention. Amelia Maria de Carlo didn't do danger. My sister was the adventurous one. I was satisfied with safe, clean fun. Give me a steamy romance novel with forbidden love and impossible odds. That was the kind of adventure I could get behind. A little more than a month ago, I would have laughed with my sister over the possibility something like a giant, netherworldly snake even existed, thinking Nonna's superstitions were hard at work again. Even with magic running through my veins, I never fully believed in the stories she told us. They were too fantastical. Immortal, blood-drinking creatures like the Wicked couldn't be real. Now I knew better. Every tall tale was rooted in truth. I followed a strange, foul egg odor and bits of snakeskin that had been shed, wishing I'd gotten over my aversion to Wrath's dagger and had taken it with me. Light from grates above dappled the ground every once in a while, but I traveled mostly in darkness. I paid attention to the slightest shift in atmosphere, allowing my senses to guide me. I had a suspicion the demon wouldn't want to draw attention to itself or its precious treasure. Plus, I already had a good idea where its nest was. Greed said it was under the cathedral, and I was quickly approaching the turnoff for it. I paused at the corner and collected myself. I'd been mentally running through my plan, and now that I was almost facing my enemy, it seemed like it was much too simple to actually work. Maybe Wrath had decided to send me to my death armed with an impossible scheme. Diabolical demon. I drew in a deep breath. I could do this, but I needed to move quickly. The longer I stood around, debating, the more my fear grew. I imagined what my sister would do if she was here instead. She'd charge in to save the day, like she tried doing when she'd agreed to the devil's bargain. Granted, that didn't turn out to be the wisest decision, but at least she was brave enough to try. Compared to what she'd done, casting a simple sleep spell and retrieving a necklace was easy. I exhaled slowly and peered around the corner. Amber-colored light spilled into the chamber from above, illuminating the snake-shaped demon. Wrath hadn't exaggerated. The Viperidae was bigger than he was. Oil-slick midnight scales covered a body coiled in the center of the tunnel. Even curled up, the demon took up most of the space. Its prone form was taller than me by a good head or more. When it was alert and upright, I didn't want to think about facing something like that. I pulled a handful of dried chamomile leaves from my skirt pocket, offered them to the goddess of night and slumber, and whispered, "Somnum." Steady breathing indicated the beast was now in a deep slumber, a gift from the goddess. I exhaled. Now I just had to find the amulet and sneak back out the way I'd come. The Viperidae faced the opposite direction, and its head was easily twice the size of our biggest oven. I didn't have to see its fangs to know they'd skewer me with one bite. I scanned the nest and almost whooped with victory when I spotted a familiar horn-shaped object. My sister's amulet glinted on the ground next to the beast. As luck would have it, the cornicello was on my side of the tunnels. It seemed like it should be fairly easy to sneak over, grab it, and retreat without waking the demon. I looked around, cataloging every exit I could make out in the dim light. Two more tunnels formed offshoots in a Y layout. Easy. And it would have been if it wasn't for all the pebbles and debris littered on the ground. One small misstep, and regardless of the sleep spell, the Viperidae would be on me in an instant. I gave one last prayer to a goddess I hoped was listening, and took the first step into the tunnel. I didn't so much as breathe too deeply, fearful of making the slightest sound. Unnatural silence blanketed the chamber like freshly fallen snow. Once, when we were little, Nonna brought us to a cabin in northern Italy where we met one of her friends. I was too young to remember what the exact circumstances were, but I never forgot the smothering quiet of snow. I was more than halfway to the amulet when I noticed the beast had stopped breathing evenly. I paused, foot midair, and waited for death. The trouble with sleep spells was there was no way to prevent someone or something from waking normally. When the Viperidae didn't move, I decided to finish what I'd started. If it was lingering somewhere between sleeping and wakefulness, it wouldn't remain that way forever. My attention split between it and the ground, careful not to make any noise. I didn't so much as allow one pebble to skitter out of place. Finally, after what felt like 1,000 cursed years, I reached the amulet and slowly, painstakingly, bent to retrieve it. I kept my eyes on the demon, which turned out to be a terrible mistake. The instant my fingers clasped the cornicello, the chain swished across the ground. The Viperidae struck. Its tail whipped out, knocking me off my feet in one quick blow. I gripped Vittoria's amulet with one hand and a handful of dirt and pebbles in the other. I waited until the demon was almost on me before tossing the debris into its eyes. The Viperidae released a multi-layered scream that sent chills racing down my spine. Holy goddess above, I had really pissed it off. The snake-like demon coiled in and around itself, screeching and thrashing. Chunks of stone fell from the walls in an avalanche of chaos. Dust clouds filled the air, choking me. One tunnel was now completely sealed off. I had to get out of there immediately, but couldn't. I huddled as far away from the demon as possible, trying to crawl along the wall. It was moving too quickly, and I couldn't chance getting hit with its tail. It wouldn't be long before it worked the grip from its eyes. The Viperidae's powerful body crashed into the tunnel on the right, and I didn't waste my only opportunity to escape. I shot past it, heart hammering, praying it didn't swing back around and clip me. I took my first step into the tunnel I'd used to get here, when it happened. A fang the size of a sword pierced the fleshy part on my lower back. The bite was lightning fast, over and done with before I could scream. I stopped moving. My whole body prickled and went ice cold. I knew enough of herbal folk remedy to know the signs of shock. Major trauma sometimes took a few seconds to catch up to nerve receptors in the brain. Just as I thought it, the pain hit me a beat later. Hot, searing, all-consuming. I dropped to the ground and turned in time to see the Viperidae closing in for the kill. I rolled a second before it tore out my throat. The sudden movement made my wound split wider and throb. Blood splattered around me, and I did my best not to focus on the possibility that the demon had already struck a death blow. It came for me again, and this time I let it get close enough to see my reflection in its slitted eyes. I shoved the screaming pain aside, heart pounding. I waited, waited. It lowered its head, ready to sink its fangs. I struck hard and fast, shoving Vittoria's amulet into one of its eyes. Warm liquid gushed over my hands as the Viperidae shrieked one last time. I shoved harder, until I was almost certain I'd pierced its brain. I didn't wait to see if it was dead or badly injured. I turned and fled. For a little while, anyway, the venom had other plans for me. Chapter 21. Everything spun wildly. Like the few times I'd mistakenly had too much wine with Claudia and Vittoria. I staggered back down the tunnel and collapsed under the grate I'd snuck in through. Escape was so close, yet impossibly far. I needed to gather my strength and drag myself up, and vowed to do just that. Once my head stopped spinning and the nausea passed, a soft thud landed near me, followed by a series of exquisitely foul curses. If I wasn't convinced opening my mouth would bring on the vomit I was barely suppressing, I'd have laughed over the colourful litany. I couldn't exactly remember his name at the moment, but I recalled he wasn't normally prone to such outbursts. But for some reason, the situation struck me as funny when it was anything but. My head suddenly ached, the pain sharp and vicious. It felt like 1,000 needles were pricking my brain simultaneously. I groaned, which only made it worse.
"Where are you hurt?"
His voice was too loud. I batted him away, but he was an annoyingly persistent devil.
"Focus. Did it bite you, witch?"
"Stop." Fingers probed my skull, my throat, then hesitated at my neckline. Somehow, I'd managed to loop the cornicello over my head. He rolled me onto my side, and I nearly passed out from the next wave of agony. He clearly didn't care about my pain and suffering. Maybe he enjoyed it. I vaguely recalled hating him.
Now I knew why.
He paused for less than a heartbeat. Then the sound of fabric tearing was followed by a blast of ice down my back. Air battered against my ripped flesh, the pain absolutely blinding in its fury. I think I might have screamed.
Shit.
Two solid arms hoisted me up, caging me against a body that had to be made of steel, not muscle and bone. We started moving swiftly, his steps fluid and graceful. Which was a good thing. If he bounced while running, I'd throw up all over him. I didn't think he'd like that. Wind whipped at my hair. We were travelling at an impossible speed through city streets. I made the mistake of looking at buildings flashing by once, and instantly regretted it. I nestled against his warm chest and squeezed my eyes shut. Pain was all I knew.
"We're almost there."
My teeth chattered uncontrollably. I had no idea where there was, but hoped it had blankets and a fire. A coldness was spreading through me, all-consuming and terrible. I had the worst feeling I'd never know the comfort of warmth again. Which was strange, since I thought the day had been especially hot. Icy numbness slowly spread up my legs. A door clattered open, then slammed shut. It felt like we ran up a set of stairs, and then I was laid onto a soft mattress. Shouts rang out after me. Muffled voices were hard to distinguish. Water splashing into a basin overtook my senses, followed by the unmistakable scent of smoke. I thrashed. Somewhere deep in my memory, I knew what the smoke meant. Danger!
"Don't worry."
Another voice, male, unfamiliar.
"He knows what to do and will be back soon."
Blankets tucked me in so tightly I could barely breathe. I must have gasped. Warm hands were on my forehead.
"Shh, don't struggle. It makes the venom spread faster."
Time narrowed into the smallest fraction of itself. I knew nothing but random seconds and unrelenting agony. My heartbeat was so loud, it made my head pound. Moments passed. Pain persisted. Then a crackling fire. The scent of smoke. And he was back, prying my eyes open.
"I'll fix this. But you have to grant me permission. Do you?"
I tried to nod, but could barely move. He crouched beside me, placed his hands on either side of my head, and repeated the question. He must have felt the nearly imperceptible movement this time. Before the next wave of pain struck, he was a blur of action.
"Watch the perimeter and do not interrupt us, no matter what,"
he barked at someone I couldn't see. Panic set in again. Perimeter? Was I in hell? He scooped me up, a door shut behind us, and his voice turned noticeably gentler.
"I need to get us both into the water, all right?"
I tried to say yes, but the numbness spread to my throat. I think he saw the answer in my face anyway. It sounded like he whispered,
"Live long enough to hate me for this."
The next thing I felt was warmth, like I was floating on a cloud near the sun. Words in a language I didn't understand were spoken at my ear. Lips brushed against my skin. One of the last pleasant sensations I experienced before darkness closed in.
"Drink."
I wanted to, more than anything, but couldn't. He tilted my head back, parted my lips, and poured nectar down my throat. I tried threshing against the cloying taste of it, so sweet and thick that I almost choked. But I'd long since lost the ability to move on my own. A tear slipped down my cheek, and strong fingers brushed it away. Water splashed. A different kind of warmth encompassed me. Soft, gentle lips met mine. It was a whisper, a promise, an unbreakable vow. It shattered the pain and felt like home. I think I wanted more, but was denied. He quietly chanted, his words foreign. Brilliant light flashed, and then my true hell began. A soft sound roused me from the worst dream I'd ever had. I cracked an eye and kept my breathing deep and even. I was soaking in a tub. For a second, I had no idea how I'd gotten here. Then flashes came to me. I couldn't tell if they were dreams or memories. A metallic snake inked onto an arm banded around my body. Not in possession, but solidarity. Like Wrath had followed me into my nightmare, battled death, and dragged me out. At some point, I thought his tongue flicked over my jugular, tracing an invisible S along my skin. I remembered the feeling of every nerve ending, every molecule sizzling, instantly attuned to where I wanted those lips to move next. I swore I still felt heat lingering from the brief contact. I was surprised that I didn't hate it. I squeezed my eyes shut as more images resurfaced. A giant serpent, a deadly fight, fangs, blood, my grandmother's neck slashed, drinking something thicker than honey, and so saccharine I had to gag it down. Strange words spoken fervently, a kiss followed by a blinding spark. Then the nightmares began. Demons screeching, claws scraping, an unfamiliar woman with midnight eyes and fire in her soul cursing me. A city of fire and ice, an obsidian throne room, a crown forged of flames and smoke. Enormous gates crafted from bone and leathery wings bursting open. Betrayal. I shoved the dream from my mind and focused on my surroundings, then promptly wished I hadn't. I vaguely recalled the sensation of warm, wet-slicked skin against mine, muscular legs, the feeling of complete safety. I didn't know if that was real or imagined either. I closed my eyes again and silently counted until my pulse slowed. It took a second, but I realized my wound was completely healed. Wrath had worked an enormously powerful spell. I felt recharged, almost buzzing with excess energy. I'd been an empty vessel before being poured beyond capacity with life. I wanted to jump up and dance, or fight, or make love, maybe all at once. To avoid thinking about forbidden kisses while I was naked, I concentrated on the room. I was in a bathing chamber that was ornate yet shabby. The chipped marble tub was beautiful, white with veins of gold. Mosaic tiles covered the walls, depicting winged creatures and fields of flowers. A slight rustle from the corner to my left caught my attention. Wrath stood with his back to me, as if offering a bit of privacy. Rivulets stripped off the planes of his tanned upper body, his very toned and naked upper body. Goddess above, he needed to put a shirt on immediately. Until he did, I stole a peek at the ink I'd seen in the cave the first night I'd summoned him. Shimmering gold and charcoal tattoos crossed from shoulder to shoulder. They appeared to be lines of Latin, but I was too far away to be sure. I swallowed hard and averted my focus. It looked like he'd gotten out of the tub moments before I'd awakened. Those foggy bits from last night were definitely memories then, not dreams. My face heated. He probably already figured out I was awake and was waiting for me to say something. This was painfully awkward. Not wanting to delay the inevitable, I cleared my throat. He rotated until we were face to face. Tousled damp hair made him appear almost human, but the energy irradiating around him shattered the illusion. It was like soaking in a tub while lightning struck perilously close by. He was alert and looked like he had been for quite some time. It was strange seeing him outside of the summoning circle. Stranger still that he'd saved me. I wasn't sure what that meant, if anything. I settled against the side of the tub and took a deep breath. Despite his proclamation about not coming for me, he didn't let me die. I didn't know what powers he'd invoked to bring me back from the edge of death, but he'd given all he had. And I didn't think my protection charm was the only reason he'd helped me. I'd felt something last night, more intimate than if we'd shared a bed. For one strangely long second, I swore we'd been inside each other's minds. What I saw there, deep where he couldn't hide it, wasn't simple hatred he felt toward me. It was much more complex. Light filtered in from an arched window with no coverings, accentuating the chiseled angles of his face. If I didn't know exactly what he was, I might mistake him for an angel. Which, in a way, I supposed he was. I wondered what he'd done that was evil enough to be cast out of heaven. I didn't ask. I doubted he'd confess his sins. His focus roved over my features, his expression unreadable. I fought a chill. I had these dreams, I said slowly. Or memories. Maybe both. You used powerful magic last night. I watched him carefully. He didn't move or break eye contact. For a horrible second, I wondered if he'd gone catatonic. Then he cocked his head, waiting. Before I went after the Viperidae, you said there was a great cost for an antidote. I glanced down at the water. I remembered the way we'd been sitting, his legs and arms and body flush against mine. I'd seen illustrations before. Only a few ancient rituals required bare skin contact. In essence, they were a rebirth of sorts, like he'd transferred some of his power to me, using water as a conductor between our flesh. None of the rituals were to be taken lightly. I wasn't sure if his magic was the same as a witch's, but figured it was close. I flicked my attention back to his. What was your price for saving me?
The temperature seemed to plummet. He held my gaze as he slowly crossed the room. Unyielding anger shone in those golden eyes.
You should be more concerned with the price you had to pay. I hope it was worth it.
He turned to leave. Before he could, I hopped up from the water and blocked his retreat.
You can't say that and just go. What was the price?
Would you really like to have this conversation in the bath?
Why not? Suddenly feeling shy?
He exuded the opposite of shyness. Honestly, with a body like that and all of that power, I wasn't surprised by his confidence. He crossed his arms over his broad chest. Up close, the gold snake tattooed on his arm was breathtaking.